You're listening to the Unveiling Mormonism podcast from PursueGod.org. Join us every Monday as we pull back the curtain on Mormon history, culture, and doctrine. Find more resources to continue the conversation at PursueGod.org/Mormonism. All right, well, Bo and KD, it has been over a year that you guys have been a part of this podcast. It's been so fun having you help us unpack Mormonism, culture, history, doctrine. And it was February 20th, 2023, Bo. I know that date because it's my son's birthday. It was his 20th birthday. And that was when you shared your testimony, the seminary teacher who, I don't remember how we titled it, but episode 13 for our listeners who want to listen to your story. But I just realized, guys, we never really heard KD's story. So KD, that's what we're going to do today. I want you to share your story. So many listeners over the last year have gotten to hear your perspective, your take. It's still, every time we get on these recordings, it's just amazing to me to hear just how much you've learned and how much you're growing in your faith as a follower of Jesus. But man, you've had to unpack a lot. I think so many, especially so many women coming out of Mormonism would be blessed to hear your story. So why don't you share it with us?
Yeah, I'm happy to. I was born here in Utah. I was born out of wedlock to an inactive Mormon dad and an inactive convert to Mormonism mom. And they did get married eventually after I was born. After a while, I think I was like one. And then after my baby brother was born, I was about, I can't remember, 3 or 4 years old when we, my parents decided that they wanted to be sealed in the temple. And I remember them talking, not when I was 3 or 4, but later, talking about how great that Mormon bishop was in that ward and helped them get worthy to go to the temple and get on the covenant path. And I still have that memory of being sealed to them in the temple with my baby brother. So that is kind of where I start. So at that point, the temple and that faith becomes huge to me as a kid. I'm like, I start learning about the temple when I'm this age. I start to grow and ask questions. I become really interested in spiritual things, because that experience of going to the temple, learning about eternal families and how heaven worked in Mormonism really shaped me as a young child. And I remember asking my parents a lot of hard questions. I do specifically remember them looking at each other like, who is this child that's asking us these strange questions about, is there other Jesuses on other planets and things like that? I remember asking them. And so, yeah, that was kind of the start of my life. But my parents had a pretty rocky marriage. And when I was about 8, I do remember them having an argument and I heard them talking about divorce. I can't remember if I'd heard them talking about divorce or if I kind of just, I assumed like, wow, this is a big fight. They had a lot of big fights. There was lots of yelling in my home, throwing things, stuff like that. And I heard the word divorce. And at that age, it hit me so hard that if my parents got divorced, that I would no longer be sealed to them, to both of them. And I remember going to them and begging them to not get a divorce as a young child because I was just so worried about our family being together forever. That was like a huge, huge worry I had. And I kind of felt a little bit responsible for their marriage. And for some reason, as a child, I kind of took it upon myself to try to, you know, be a good example and keep them together.
Did your parents stay together or did they?
No, eventually they did divorce, but that wasn't until they separated right before Bo and I got married when I was about 20. So
would you say then it was another 12 years of just a rocky marriage?
Absolutely. Yeah. It was really pretty rocky, and then it just slowly deteriorated over the next, 12 years. So.
Okay. So real quick for our non-Mormon listeners, is it true that the ceiling in the temple, so what does happen in a case of divorce? Bo, seminary teacher, maybe you can jump in and give us just a quick little, give Katie a break for a second and tell us, was she right? Was 8-year-old Katie right? Would it have broken up the eternal family?
Yeah, she's pretty close actually. And look, that's a fear of a lot of kids in a lot of Mormon families around the world, is that your eternal family is at stake if your parents can't stay together. Now, in Mormonism, there has to be a temple divorce that takes place for the ceiling to be broken. And then essentially the children at that point go with the patriarch of the family. They go with the priesthood line typically, which is, there's a lot of complicated stuff when you start talking about tying eternal families to eternal families to eternal families and so on and so on. But technically, yeah, she was right. Like, if, for example, if her dad had left the church or been excommunicated, that ceiling would have been broken. If they would have got a divorce for several different reasons, right? That one of them could have lost membership in the church, and that would have caused a temple severing of that ceiling. So there's several things that could have occurred. And yeah, as a kid, I'm sure it was terrifying to hear the word divorce, and you're 8 years old, and 5 years ago you got sealed to your parents, and that was a special moment for you. So yeah, that's how it works in the Mormon church.
So KD, did your siblings have similar anxiety around this, or did you kind of feel like you were especially sort of maybe like spiritually sensitive even in your early years?
Yeah, my parents went on to have, so me and my brother were sealed to them in the temple. My parents went on to have, 3 more kids. And I definitely was the really spiritually sensitive. I think I can't really speak for my other brother and sisters, but I was definitely the one in the household that was constantly like wanting everyone to go to church, really wanted everybody to, follow the Mormon God. I just felt pretty keenly aware of spiritual things. I prayed a lot as a child. I remember, I had a spiritual experience when I was 7 where God spoke to me, and I was riding my bike and I heard a voice say stop, and I'm super stubborn. So the voice had to say it 3 times before I hit the brakes, and a car came flying around the corner, and I realized like, wait, God just saved my life at 7 years old. And I was a little confused at 7 because I knew for a fact that the Holy Ghost was given to those who were baptized. And I ran, I biked home and asked my mom, like, can I have the Holy Ghost? Can I hear the Holy Ghost if I'm not baptized? And she was just like, I don't know, maybe, so yeah, I think I was pretty spiritually sensitive as a kid.
It's interesting, Katie, when you look back on this now that you understand more theologically, you understand biblical doctrine better. We went through systematic theology with you. It was so fun. We did it with Bo earlier in the year. In fact, I encourage our listeners, if you've come out of Mormonism or even just our Christian listeners, check out SysTheo at pursuegod.org, and we dive into all these kind of, probably just a little headier content. It was so fun to hear your questions. So Katie, I can see what you're saying, this is kind of how God wired you, I think. But when you look back on it now, do you recognize that the God of the Bible, this is probably good for our listeners, do you recognize that the God of the Bible was still with you, even though you were in a religion that wasn't biblical?
Yeah, absolutely. I have, as I think back, I've had it throughout my life, multiple experiences that I now look back and see as the God of the Bible reaching out to me. So growing up, my parents they wavered in and out of activity and inactivity in the LDS church. And when they didn't take us kids to church, I would beg to go. At a young age, I already recognized all that we needed to do to inherit eternal life and be an eternal family. And I really took that weighty responsibility on me for the next couple of years. And I was super motivated to do what was right, to be as worthy as possible and be a really good example to my family. I think that was something that was stressed at church. I think, you know, like I remember being encouraged as a kid, like if your parents don't read the scriptures at home, you can say, no, let's do this together. You know, you can encourage your parents. And I took that to heart. I really did. And that though, I do believe I was a super judgmental and self-righteous child. I know I judged my parents really harshly because I knew if they didn't live up to their promises that they made in the temple, that we couldn't all be together. And I kind of blamed them for that, you know, that we wouldn't all be sealed together if they weren't, you know, living their temple covenants. So, but as I entered into my teen years, I sort of gave up on that illusion that I had any sway over the adults in my life. And I began to shift my focus to the future. I just thought, well, if I can't have an eternal family with my immediate family, which I still hoped for, you know, I still hoped that that would be the case. But I shifted my focus to the future and to a husband, which is, I think, highly encouraged to young women in Mormonism too, to start looking to the future and looking to becoming a wife.
Okay, let me ask a cultural question here. In your guys' experience in the Mormon church, is it normal for one of the kids to be what you just described, KD? Because I would guess, Bo, that was you also, that you were the kind of the good kid, the good Mormon kid. Is this a normal dynamic in Mormon homes?
Yeah, I think so. I think there's always one of the kids that steps up as the judgmental, self-righteous know-it-all that I was. Yeah, absolutely.
So, and then you ended up together. So two judgmental, self-righteous. It's like the firstborn. You don't ever want to marry another firstborn if you're a firstborn, because that just comes, you know. And you guys are you both firstborns?
No, I'm middle child.
Oh, I'm
a forgotten one.
No, for the middle, the middle children usually don't ever do anything with their lives. So good job, Bo. You really exceeded all expectations. But KD, I would imagine your siblings were really, you probably don't win your siblings over when you're growing up like that.
No, no, they absolutely hated me. I was like, they didn't hate me, but like, it was definitely, I was like trying to be a mom. You know, I think that's pretty normal for a firstborn girl, but it was like, I took it to the max. Cause I was like, sort of trying to like encourage my siblings to go to church, encourage them to follow, you know, what I was learning in church. And, like I said, my parents were in and out of activities. So especially by the time I'm like in my teen years, it's not an often thing that they're going. And I would take whoever would come with me to church. I would encourage my siblings to come with me, you know? So
at what point in like the young women's lessons do they start talking about marriage?
Oh, right when you're 12.
Really?
I mean, you head into young women's, and I think the 12-year, I mean, they split you up by age groups. So the 12-year-olds probably don't get it quite as much as definitely you get it more and more as you move up in young women's. But yeah, I definitely remember, you know, learning in young women's that I was preparing to become a wife, a mother, and to be, to get ready to make that eternal link with someone else. That was the whole goal.
So, and gosh darn it, if you couldn't have a worthy family with your family of origin, then you were going to find a husband who would be worthy, and together you could forge your own eternal family. And this is around the time, KD, when you learned about polygamy in heaven. And how'd you respond to the, because here you are, you're in high school now, maybe late high school, and you finally now learn about polygamy in heaven. Tell us what happened.
Yeah. I don't really remember how it came up. I don't even think it was in church. I think it was just talking with some of my friends, and they brought it up, and I was so freaked out. Like, that just rocked my world. I think it particularly rocked my world because learning that a man can be married to multiple women in heaven, you know, whatever happens on this earth. So a man can divorce a woman, but not temple divorce her, go on and get remarried. And then both those women are his wife in heaven, you know, whether ever happened on this earth or not. And my dad was pretty critical of my mom openly, like in her appearance and otherwise. And he was also unfaithful to my mom. And I just felt like so, like that was just a huge weight. Like, I didn't want my future husband to treat me like that, like my dad treated my mom. And it was, it puts you in a weird spot as a woman because, well, at least for me as a teenager, I took that pretty hard. Like, wow, okay, so polygamy in heaven's a thing. I just hated that because of how my dad was unfaithful to my mom and how he treated her, and yet she was going to be stuck with him for eternity. And she's never did get a temple divorce from my dad. And in my teenage head, that it turned into something that was not good. So for me as a teenager, that translated into me becoming really, really controlling over my body and how I looked. I was super disciplined already in my exercise, but for some reason, this just amped it up. I honestly kind of wish your wife was on here, Tracy, so she could like explain this, like psychologically what happened. But like, I became so obsessed with being the perfect woman so that my future husband would never look to any other woman. I was super, super disciplined in my exercise. I restricted my calorie intake a lot. I also turned to spiritual stuff because that was also a place where I felt comfort. I read my Book of Mormon nightly. I wrote my journal. I prayed daily. I knew I wanted a really godly man. And I knew that the harder I worked at becoming a godly woman, I would have a higher likelihood of being blessed to meet a godly man to be my future husband. And this was the key, I think, that really changed everything, was that I prayed for God to make me the woman he needed me to be. And I think that, I'm sorry, I hate crying, but I think that small sacrifice of myself just helped God be able to reach out to me a little bit.
Katie, do you feel like this story is unique to you, or is this a common, I've never heard it so clearly articulated before, but it's, you're trying to be worthy. It's not just, and I almost wonder for women if this is kind of what Mormonism does to young women. If you're learning about this from the age 12, you know, Bo is learning that he can be a god someday. Well, I don't know exactly how they're teaching that to you, but basically, right, you're striving to be a god. And Katie, you're striving to not be rejected by God, who is your husband. That has to be such a bizarre place to be in. And that, you know, young teenage KD is putting this together. Now, again, you're probably a little bit more clued into this than the average teenage Mormon girl, but I'm sure that you're not the only one who tried to control your body and who tried to not be rejected by your future husband because so much was on the line.
Yeah, absolutely. I think I wanted to share that part of my life because I do believe that this is not something that is unique to me. I think that not every woman experiences it this way in Mormonism, but I do think it is pretty common, unfortunately. Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe this would be good to just kind of interject the truth of the Bible real quick, because some young women might be listening to this for the first time and hearing this and you're like, well, then wait, what did you learn, KD? What if that's not true? What is true? I'll get you started, but you can finish it if you want. But what's true is your marriage isn't eternal. Your husband isn't God or will never be a God. There's one God, and he won't reject anyone who comes to him in faith. The God of the Bible does not reject somebody. The God of the Bible does not cheat on somebody. The God of the Bible is faithful and true and loving and reliable. And when he said in his word that anyone who would come to him and accept him by faith, like, you don't have to be insecure about that ever. But if your idea of eternity is connected to an imperfect man, and Bo, you're a pretty good guy, but you're not a perfect man. So even now, KD, as a Christian, you recognize your eternal destiny is in no way dependent on Bo. You have a relationship with God through Jesus Christ, and you don't have to be insecure about it.
Yeah, absolutely. That was, at the end of this, you'll see that that's a huge relief for me. That's something that I am released from. I no longer see God as a being among many, right? He's not. He was never a man. He was never, you know, a man who made it to an eternal glory and became a God of this world. That's not the true God. I no longer see that God anymore. I found the true God, who is not simple and not small. He is big and all-encompassing. And learning that at the end of this, you'll see how much of a relief I get. Mm.
Okay, so let's go back to your story then, KD. So here you are, you're working on yourself, you're trying to be perfect, you're trying to be the perfect future wife to somebody, and then you meet the perfect man. You meet Bo. You meet him in college. You were 19, almost 20. So tell us what happened there, and how did you sweep this guy? Like, how did you convince this guy that you would be a worthy wife?
Yeah, good question. I think that's a question for Bo. I think I fooled him. That's what I think. I met Bo in college. Maybe one day he'll share that fun story. But I met him in college, and we started dating, and then very quickly we were hardly ever apart. We fell in love, and I fell head over heels for him. He is kind, and he was not critical. He was driven, spiritual, committed to living the gospel of Mormonism, and he wanted to get married in Temple. And that was everything I'd been waiting for. He even wanted to be a seminary teacher. And I was just so excited. I just knew God would bless our marriage, and we would just ride off into the setting sun on a white horse to our happily ever after.
That's pretty good. Yeah. But if you think about it, that's like every single Mormon fairy tale right there, right? Is like, that's the end to all that you were working for as a youth. Is, yeah, you get married in that big shiny building. You have no idea the clothes you're wearing when you're going to get married in that big shiny building, or the weird stuff you do in there. But that's like, that's that point, right? Mm-hmm. That's where all of a sudden you did everything you were supposed to do as a youth. You meet the woman or the man of your dreams. You get married in that big shiny building in the temple, and right off in the sunset.
Yeah, it looks like a castle. You know, it's like a beautiful white princess castle. And man, I was so excited.
But how did it turn out? Was it a castle? Was it everything you had hoped for?
No. So... No, unfortunately, we have talked about the temple a lot, so listeners can go back and kind of hear a little bit. But yeah, the temple was not what I thought it would have been. But I was surrounded by Bo's family, the excited family, my fiance's family, and my mom and my my aunt and uncle were there smiling at me and giving me thumbs up when weird stuff would come up, and I was like giving them confused looks. After that, after we got married, the reality is that I did not settle into marriage with the ease that I had hoped. I became super, super controlling. I did not want to mess this up. I love Bo. And I knew I wanted this family to be eternal, and I refused to forsake the weird covenants I'd made. They weren't that weird, but like, I didn't even care because I knew that I wanted to be more than what my parents had been, which was super prideful. But that is how it kind of manifests. And my parents separated, as I mentioned, right before we got married. And that just drove me, my perfectionistic personality, to the brink. And Beau, who thought he was marrying a sweet little Mormon girl, he opened Pandora's box. And he saw me as what I really was. I was broken and I was obsessed with being perfect. And he started to see the mental abuse I put myself through every time I'd make even a small mistake, because I did not want to jeopardize this. And church was hell for me, to be honest. I hated going, and I would pick up on everything that I was doing wrong. And I'm sure that's not ever the message that was taught, but that's how I heard it. And I picked up on everything I was doing wrong, and I would obsess over it.
So church would make you want to be more perfect. Church would add to your burden, not take away.
Yeah. I mean, it basically added more things to her checklist, right? Of things that she had to do to be perfect. And like, the commandment to be perfect was something that she truly like tried to live up to, right? So she would beat herself up every Sunday for the way that she looked, or the way that the kids looked later. This is later on, you know, when we had kids. Or just like maybe that she hadn't prayed the night before, or hadn't read her scriptures in the last 2 days, like just silly stuff that she would just beat herself up over. And again, it was because the attempt to earn your salvation, to earn your place as a couple in, you know, an eternal family.
So, Beau, for you as a husband, are you, I'm hearing this as a Christian man, and I'm thinking how I would try to help my wife through this. And the tools in my toolbox are grace, forgiveness. The Holy Spirit moves us from the inside out, that it's not about a checkbox. It's not about, but that's how I would have approached it. How, as a seminary teacher at this point, how did you approach this? How did you try to help her through this?
This was hard. This was hard because I still believed in the checklist. But I also believed in grace. So that's what's so hard about being Mormon, is you believe in both. And because you believe in grace after all you can do, right? So that's what's so tricky about it when you're Mormon, is you're like, well, Christ's grace covers you, you're fine. But also don't stop doing everything you possibly can. So it's really hard.
Which isn't grace. Yeah.
Yeah, that's not grace. So it's really hard to coach someone through that. So, I mean, it ended up that I would just, you know, try to tell KD, like, hey, it's okay if you don't read your scriptures every day. Like, don't worry about it. Like, it's okay if we don't read our scriptures as a couple, or if we don't pray together. Like, it's okay. Like, because anytime we would do that stuff, it would just turn into like, you know, a really hard time for Katie,
it would be a reminder to her.
Yeah.
Going to church, reading her scriptures, it'd be a reminder to her that she wasn't enough. And she had tried so hard to be enough.
That's right. And she'd already done all of the things in Mormonism for you to be enough, right? And she wasn't still. And it drove her nuts. It would eat at her. And so, yeah, for me as the husband, I tried my best to coach her through it. I tried my best to remind her that, like, no, like, Christ's grace covers you. But at the same time, there's this checklist in Mormonism that you can't get away from. And she realized that. And anyway, so yeah, it was tricky. I obviously didn't do a great job of it.
Well, no, you did, because what's amazing is you stayed together. And that is a cool part of your story, is that you were able to stay together. And obviously now the story is different now that you have Jesus in your life. But I do think like the stick-to-itiveness is pretty cool in your story at this point. although maybe probably a lot of it felt like you're doing it in your own strength. And then KD, and then you added, started adding kids to the equation. So did kids solve it all? Right? Because part of the checklist is was having kids. That's a Mormon thing to do. And now you do that. And so what happens next?
Yeah, unfortunately, so this is kind of where our stories intersect a little more. Beau, unbeknownst to me, is dealing with a faith crisis. But at the same time, I'm going through postpartum depression after our first baby. And it's bad. It's not pretty. In my mind, adding a child to the family made the stakes a whole lot higher. I became even more controlling of my daughter and of Beau, and it got really ugly. I was not the best person to live with. I was very controlling. We started going to therapy at this time, and I did have a small breakthrough with a therapist. And I realized how miserable I was making Beau, and I began at this point to take a tiny, tiny amount of responsibility for my controlling behavior. But this is where God, you know, I'm trying to do everything right, and God is going to step in just a minute and just show me. God is going to step in and show me how I actually had no control, that the illusion of the control over my eternal destiny that I thought I had, that it wasn't real. So I was pregnant again. I had a 13-month-old baby, and I had pushed for this pregnancy. I was determined to be the perfect Mormon mom and have lots of kids, even at the expense of my relationship with Beau and my own mental health. I started to have some issues during this pregnancy, and we knew that this baby was a girl. And even though I had some issues during this pregnancy, our daughter was shown to be really strong in the womb, and she had a great heartbeat. We even got to see her sucking her thumb on an ultrasound. Yet I kept bleeding, and I always assumed the worst outcome. And, I began to pray to God, but I was threatening him. I started to pray and say, oh gosh, don't take this baby. I cannot go through that. I will literally die, and I'll do anything, you know, to save this baby. But God had a greater plan for me. And he was going to show me that the God of Mormonism had no power, but he was going to show me. He was going to show me his true power, and he was going to use it. And our daughter died shortly after she was born. And God, he used my grief for good. I think Beau and I had a little bit different experience with this, as always when something like this happens in a marriage, it's completely different for each person. But for me, he allowed, you know, this fallen world. He allowed this fallen world to happen, and my daughter died, and he used it. He used it to show me my weakness and my lack of control. And a couple of weeks ago, you preached on David. And it really hit home for me because David, he commits really big sin with Bathsheba, and God lets their baby die. But he forgives David, and they're blessed with another baby. But I didn't know this big God yet, and I was really angry. I was mad. I was so mad. How could he have done this to me and to us? We had done everything he had asked. We had been married in the temple. We were trying to multiply and replenish the earth. We lived what I thought was a near perfect life. And I was super tempted to go down a really dark path. You know, I almost wanted to just give up. That was the easy choice. Give up on God and give up on life. Live in resentment forever, which was super tempting, honestly. Or I could seek God, live for my child, my living child, and my husband. And I chose that path. Even though I was still mad, I still had a lot of resentment, I chose that path. And I did my best to move forward. I remember trying to use the Mormon God's atonement to heal. And it did not work. And I asked to be released from my calling. I was currently serving, when my daughter died, I was serving in primary. I was primary chorister, so all the cute little kids were singing, and I could not keep it together. I would sob in front of those poor kids, and I had to ask to be released from that calling. I don't know why, because I was obviously completely broken, but I asked to be released, but the bishop extended a calling to me pretty much immediately after. And this is the only calling I received in the Mormon Church that I believe came from God. Because he gave me the calling of Old Testament gospel doctrine teacher. And this was a hard time. I was still trying to heal and move forward. And I started reading the Old Testament. And I didn't really teach this class because Bo actually wrote much of my lesson. Every time I taught, I would turn to him and be like, I don't understand any of this. Can you help me? And so he pretty much taught it through me. But I started to realize that the Old Testament was a lot different than I thought. And that the temple in the Old Testament was worlds apart from the temple I went to. And this began to shift my mind. I began to wonder and learn about the Old Testament. That was a huge shift. I got pregnant 3 months later after the death of our daughter. And the next year, just after our second daughter's birthday, we had a healthy son. And so we were blessed. And right around when he was one, we decided to move for a job. We were still in Utah, but we moved far enough away from family and friends that it gave us some relief. So we moved away, and Bo traveled for work almost weekly. I had a reprieve. I wasn't pregnant or breastfeeding for the first time in years. And our family and friend group wasn't immediately around us. And they didn't know, like they wouldn't know if we went to church, which was something I'd never had. And this gave me some space and relief from the constant pressure of our Mormon community. And I was still learning to give up control of my life and over other people. And this was the first time when Bo and I were able to start expressing our kind of concerns about the LDS Church.
Yeah, we were going to church every week still praying, still reading the scriptures, all the basic check boxes, right? But yeah, I think, because at this point I had stopped teaching seminary years earlier, right? And I think at this point it was more, we were just starting to kind of realize the inconsistencies, I think starting to uncover a bit of the church history stuff. There were several things kind of that were poking out in culture at that time as well that were kind of driving us nuts.
But you're still at this point, Bo, you're not coming home telling KD about what you're learning about the gospel topics, and you're not expressing openly to each other your doubts. I think you both had your own doubts. Bo, yours were probably more doctrinal, I would say, and historical. KD, yours are probably more like experiential almost at this point, like as you're realizing you can't live up to this.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. I was, I had absolutely learned that I had no control over my life and that I just couldn't live up to the expectations that I thought were placed on me. So, eventually we did move back to our old community. And we saw that as God working in our life. When we actually found a home that was right back in our old ward that we moved away from. And we just thought, wow, God is really showing us like, no, this is where you need to be. This is, we, you know, recommit. I mean, not that we had stopped going to church or anything, but just, you know, mentally recommit. And we did try to recommit, but COVID had just hit. And I'd also had our fourth baby. So we ended up not going to church with COVID happening and a new baby. So that also gave us like a small reprieve away, you know, where we kind of had to sort of figure out what we were going to do as a family. And this is where, you know, fast forward a couple years and our daughter is 8 and we're getting ready to baptize her, our oldest. And yeah, this is where kind of our story starts. Bo did not want to baptize her. He was really uncomfortable with it.
Yeah, I think this is where we've probably shared a bunch of experiences, I think, on this podcast about, you know, kind of this part. But yeah, basically, at this point, I was pretty close to convinced that Joseph Smith had made this stuff up based on my study of the gospel topics essays. And once COVID hit, those next 2 years, I started diving back into kind of some of the church history stuff, reading only church-approved material. But it gave me, like you said, a bit of reprieve to sort of do my own study. And that's kind of when I uncovered what I had read as a seminary teacher that made me stop teaching seminary, which was the gospel topics essays. I did more research and, you know, uncovered that stuff. So I had been reading all of this. Meanwhile, you know, every once in a while, kind of bringing up a concern to Katie. And yeah, then when our daughter turned 8, I just realized I couldn't baptize her. And really what it came down to is I had no problem baptizing her. It was, I didn't want her being raised in this like I was and like KD was. I didn't want her growing up thinking that she had to try to be perfect. I didn't want that for her. And I also, if she wanted to be Mormon, I wanted her to choose that when she knew what she was choosing. And when she knew all the stuff Joseph Smith did with 30 different women, right? Marrying 30 different women. I wanted her to know that he had been a treasure digger, ripping people off on fake treasure digs before he claimed to find these golden plates in the ground. So I wanted her to know all that stuff first. And I just didn't feel comfortable baptizing her. But,
but I was convinced I definitely didn't want her to grow up the way I had, you know, and go have the pressures that I had had. But I really, really wanted her to have a relationship with God because that had obviously just carried me through some of the worst times of my life. And I didn't know any other way. Like I thought we were Christian and I thought this is the best way to teach our kids about God.
Yeah. So we baptized our daughter. I went on a business trip. I read the final thing I needed to on Joseph Smith's polygamy and on the seer stone. And did I text you or call you?
You texted me.
Come on, Bo.
Like, it was probably like at midnight or something.
You texted me. It was like the middle of the day. You texted me, I'm never going back to church. I'm like, okay. And you're like, watch this video. So I watched a video about, you know, it just kind of barely touched on some of the topics in the gospel topics essay. And I was like, if this video that Bo just sent me is true, then I will fully support him not going back to church. But what are we going to do? Because I need God in my kids' lives. And I still didn't know fully the God of the Bible, but I knew that he had helped me. I still didn't know what grace was fully. I really didn't. But he comes home from his business trip and I'm like, "Okay, so let's talk. Tell me about what you know." And yeah, so over the next week or so, I read through all the stuff he had and I decided, "Yeah, we need to reevaluate." So we decided to step back from the Mormon church. We knew we might go back. but we both had a huge heart to find Jesus. That was really, really important to both of us, that we find Jesus. And even though Joseph Smith wasn't, at this point, I'm like, he must not have been who he said he was. But, and part of me wanted to just throw everything out the window. But Bo reminded me, no, just because Joseph lied, that doesn't mean Jesus isn't real. And that touched me, you know, that reminded me. And I wanted Jesus. I wanted to find Jesus. And so Bo, you know, convinced me to try Christianity, even though I thought I was already Christian. The rest is history pretty much.
So we end up finding a Christian church. I had done some research online. I really cared about kids' curriculum. I wanted to make sure that the kids were taught biblical truth. I wanted to make sure that it was centered in Jesus. And we found Alpine Church. And immediately we felt like we were home. We knew that it was sound doctrine being taught every week. We were floored by worship service. We just fell in love with worshiping Jesus in a way that we'd never worshiped before. And that changed our life. We eventually came to faith, you know, and I don't know, to your point, I think we thought we came to faith when we were 8 years old, right? Both of us did. But it was a distorted version of Jesus, which again, that distortion is what caused all of this craziness, right? Where especially, you know, even for, I mean, both of us did this, but especially for you, where you were just trying to live up to like this crazy high, perfect standard all the time, because we didn't know the real Jesus.
So KD, how do you view your ability to control eternity now that you're a Christian?
That's a good question. I don't need to control it. I don't feel, before I felt like I needed to control myself and my family in order to get to that eternal goal. And now I don't feel any need for that because I've put my faith and trust in Jesus. And I really can't express in words the relief that true grace is. Yeah, when I really started to understand true grace and God's, you know, I accepted Jesus and God's true grace found me and worked within me, I had so much relief and I started to almost be okay with myself. I don't know how to say it, but I think I've shared on the podcast before, but really understanding, coming to know what grace, the gift of grace is, and accepting it as a gift, which was hard for me as a controlling person, as a person who thought I could, you know, control my own salvation, really. Wow, that I just felt so much relief. And now I still have moments of, you know, I'm human. I kind of want to control things sometimes, but the relief of grace is so big. And Romans 3:21-22 says, "But now God has shown us a way to be made right with him without keeping the requirements of the law, as was promised in the writings of Moses and the prophets long ago. We are made right with God by placing our faith in Jesus Christ. And this is true for everyone who believes, no matter who we are."
Hey listeners, Pastor Brian here. If you're enjoying our podcast, would you consider becoming a donor? Our goal is that these podcasts would reach the largest audience possible. So obviously it takes money to create good podcasts, but more than that, we want to make sure to market this to the whole nation and even to the world. That's where your donation comes in. So would you consider becoming a monthly donor? And to do it, just visit pursuegod.org/donate.